Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
I am so excited. We have so many really, really cool people in the studio. The Fisher Center at Bard College is presenting two one-act operas performed by the Conservatory Graduate Vocal Arts Program. We'll tell you what that is in a moment. Their program singers will take part in this program on March 14th and 16th. One of the operas, Pain Hollow by Sean Yeager, is a world premiere. And the other one is Benjamin Britten's beloved The Turn of the Screw. Soprano Dawn Upshaw is a 2013 Grammy Award winner. Let that sink in for just a second. And is artistic director of the Graduate Vocal Arts Program. She joins us this morning. Dawn, a delight to have you back on the program. Thank
it's
you very
great
much.
Great to be back. Thank you.
Always a delight to have you here. Kayo Iwama is with us as well. She is the artistic director of associate director of the Graduate Vocal Arts Program, and the aforementioned composer Sean Yeager joins us as well to tell us about Pain Hollow. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having
me. It's a delight to have you all here. So, Dawn, let us begin with you. First of all, congratulations on the Grammy.
Thank you.
That's very cool.
It was fun. Nice surprise.
Is it like a just total, like when you're nominated and then you think, okay, what are the chances?
Something like that. You look at what you're up against, and in this case, I thought, well, it's really been nice to be nominated, I really didn't expect it at all. So it was quite a shock.
And they announced it in January.
Mm-hmm.
Now, David Alan Miller of the Albany Symphony, who also won a Grammy, he was here 2 weeks ago. He hasn't gotten his Grammy yet.
Oh, no. It takes a while.
Have you gotten your Grammy?
No. They send them in a box.
This before.
Four times
Grammy Award winner. Right. So it takes a while?
I think months.
Oh, okay. You think they have them ready?
It's worth waiting for.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about the program and what's happening of these operas and how it speaks to the prestige of the program overall that you're able to do something like this.
Mm. Well, a very, very important part of our program is the opera that's presented, operas that are presented every other year. And another very important element is this opportunity for the students to perform pieces written for them, world premieres. And we make a point through the operas. We also, in alternate years, have chamber music written for the students. So new music is very very big in our program, and opera as well. So this is a very large production. We have Nick Muni, director, with us, who's really directed all over the place and done a lot of professional work as well. And we're coupling it with Sean's new piece with Benjamin Britten's is kind of a magical marriage of two ghostly pieces.
So I do want to, obviously, I want to talk to Sean about Pain Hollow, but how ultimately, Kayo, did that come together? Of who asks who in that regard?
Are you talking about the selection of the
Yes.
operas?
Yes. Meaning, yeah. Do you go to Sean and say, we would like you to prepare something, or
yes.
Sean comes to you and says, oh, I have this really cool thing that maybe you'd like to do?
Well, we first met Sean through another program collaboration that the Bard Vocal Arts Program had with the Carnegie Hall organization. They do a
Heard
series.
Of them.
Yes,
yeah.
They do a series of professional workshops, and Dawn was leading one of these. It was about song and writing new compositions for a select group of singers, which included our students. And Sean submitted repertoire or music to be considered and chosen for this program, and Dawn and the partnering composer at the time, was that Donnacha Dennehy
led the program with me, and I fell in love with Sean's music immediately, and wanted to ask him as soon as possible if he would write an opera for the students at Bard. And in the process, he's also written some music for me that we premiered earlier this fall. And so I'm a huge fan of Sean's.
Yeah, and by coincidence, we didn't know this at the time, but he is married to one of our students, our former students, Lucy, the soprano, Lucy de Grey. Mm-hmm. So we were really pleased that he accepted this commission for this world premiere to further that relationship.
So, Sean, again, the name of the opera is Pain Hollow and will be presented on the 14th and 16th at the Fisher Center. What kind of input do you get when this commission is made? What sense do you get of what they want? What are your parameters?
Well, one of the nice things about this commission was that I was really provided with a lot of license to follow my passion and my interest. Mm-hmm. And that's not always the case. Sometimes you do have very specific guidelines.
Right.
But I think Don and Kyle really are interested in what gets composers excited, and they feel the best music will result from a composer following their interests and their passion. So I had a lot of room. And I had been exploring music and poetry and song from Kentucky for a number of years. That's where I grew up. And I had been reading a lot of the poetry and writing of Wendell Berry.
Mm-hmm.
He's a few years older than me, someone I look up to a whole lot as a writer and thinker. And I found this play that he had written, Sonata at Pain Hollow, about two friends of his, Harlan and Anna Hubbard, who lived in Kentucky on the shore of the Ohio River for about 34 years in a home they built themselves. And this just seemed like a really cool idea for an opera because music played a very central role in their lives. They were amateur violinist and pianist. And so in Berry's play, there's this idea of music haunting a place where this couple used to live. And that immediately got me thinking about, oh, I could create all these ghostly sounds and have maybe older music. In this case, it's actually a Brahms violin sonata, kind of emerge out of a mist, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. So that was very inspiring. The other element of this that really got me excited was just hearing the voices that I would be writing for. The students sent me recordings of themselves very early on in the process, and I really tried to tailor make this piece to their voices and their unique qualities. So I'm working with just awesome singers, and it's a real pleasure to be asked to write this piece and to have the premiere this weekend.
I mean, I don't want to overdo it and beat it over the head, but that seems like the dream gig.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. Yeah, absolutely. I had a lot of freedom, and it's a real so special that they gave me that license.
And as an artist, Don, I would think for you putting to speak for the students if you can of what an opportunity that is to have someone have you in mind when they're composing and what that's like of being given that gift.
It is a gift. It's an honor and a privilege. And I think it has become a huge part of my own work. I appreciate so much the opportunity to make music with a composer standing right near me. I've learned so much, and I also just feel there's this vitality. I feel I'm really, really living in my own time and responding to my own time. And I wanted the students to have this experience because it is a gift. It's you really grow a lot. You know, I think you learn so much. It kind of speeds up your own evolution as a musical artist to have this opportunity. So it, in an educational setting, it's really seemed important.
It would seem, and maybe, again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it would seem to be one, when you're working on a classic piece, a classic repertoire, that it's very sensory and that all of the senses are engaged and it takes you over. Whereas something like this that is being written for you and is part of you and is very natural and you've had a part in its creation, that it would almost be more like the central nervous system, you know, kind of going like running, coursing through you as a part of you.
Well, I guess we, as performing artists, we kind of hope to reach that goal, no matter, you know, to be that connected.
Right.
In that personal way. But yes, that I agree with that idea. There's also the other side where this is a musical language that is completely new to the students. So
right.
At the same time, you're kind of working with keeping yourself completely open to a whole new language with which to express yourself. So
you want there to be a sponge aspect.
Yes, absolutely.
And also, when you are engaged in something that's brand new, you don't have the weight of traditions behind you. You know,
right.
It's not like doing Hamlet and having to be the 500th Hamlet that ever was and then trying to top that Hamlet. But you get to be the initial creator of that. And that, in turn, gives you a freedom to go back to the more iconic, the standard repertory, and bring that kind of sense of yourself to that and your own individuality.
A confidence. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a sense of your artistic self
and
what you have to say about music.
So let's, I'll let you do this, Kaio. A shout out to the students.
Well, Dawn and I are so privileged to be working with this extremely high level of student. And they are such individuals. They have, of course, different voice types. They're sopranos, mezzos, tenors, and baritones, but their individual personalities and their passion and their excitement and the level of engagement that they bring. They're so open to every experience, all the input that they are getting from our world-class faculty is just such an inspiring environment. You just feel so fortunate to be able to be working with them. And also this production that they'll be on this weekend is at the Fisher Center. And we also feel so fortunate to have a production with this level of production value, with this support staff there, and our president Leon Botstein behind us. It's really a spectacular production.
Sean, what has it been like there's that one thing of the actual composing and listening to the voices and hearing those tapes and then to hear it realized. What is that like?
Well, it's both exciting and scary, especially that first rehearsal, because, I mean, you imagine this as much as you can, but you never really know what it's going to sound like until the first couple of rehearsals. And we were talking before about this idea of a new language. It takes some time for the players and the singers to get into that language and just to learn how to speak in it. But I love that process. Composing can be a fairly solitary activity.
Mm.
You're kind of sitting in your apartment imagining sound by yourself. It's, you're not out in the world. But then I get to be out in the world.
That's why I'm here in a radio studio. I love it. You guys visit every once in a while, but for the most part.
Yeah, I think it's about balance. And
yeah.
So, then I get to be involved in rehearsals and hopefully not be annoying, but I love to be there and just talk about details and how we can make this better.
Is there a pecking order in the sense of you have a director, You have a composer. You have artistic directors and associate directors.
Conductor, very important, the conductor.
And the students who have their, as you say, are learning the language and have their own voice. So to balance that, as it seems to, does that just happen rather naturally, or does it have to be more defined? I think you just answered my question.
Well, we were talking a bit about this in the car on the way up here. In a certain sense, it's there's so many people involved, it becomes a little bit like a machine with all different parts working together, and everybody knows what their own responsibility is, but yes, sometimes working out the little kinks where things don't quite meet.
So who's in charge? I mean, who ultimately makes the decision and says, this is what we're going to do and this is what we're not going to do? Because you have to have
Actually, we do it as a team.
Yeah, it has to be a negotiation.
It's really a team effort. We meet after each rehearsal and discuss any difficulties or issues that need attention, and so we may ask Sean for something slightly different. Sean may ask the conductor for something different. We ask things of the singers. The singers also speak up. So it really is a team effort.
You know, in professional companies, sometimes you'll have a big star conductor, and that person will be in charge,
right,
or a big star director, but you know, we have, I think, you know, Don is a great believer in collaboration, and that we've, I think, set up an environment in which people are free to speak, but also very respectful of each other's responsibilities. And so our two conductors, Carl Bettendorf, who will be conducting Payne Hollow, and James Bagwell, who is on the Bard faculty, you know, we're so fortunate to have them as part of the process. You know, they are aware of all of the complications and what the lighting people and the director has to deal with and the set people. I mean, the you know, carpenters are still there at the end of every rehearsal, you know, doing the last finishing touches, et cetera. So it's a big machine. And at any given point, you were constantly negotiating between the needs of one thing against the needs of the other.
And then by the time you hit on March 14th and 16th, it goes.
That's right. You let it fly.
That's right.
The Fisher Center at Bard College is presenting two one-act operas performed by Conservatory Graduate Vocal Arts Program singers. Again, it's March 14th and 16th. We have all the information up on our website, so if you go to wamc.org/roundtable, you can find out the information about all of the performances on both the 14th and the 16th. Again, it's Payne Hollow by Sean Yeager and Benjamin Britten's The Turn of the Screw. It is a delight. Kayo, Sean, Don, thank you so much for being with us this morning. I wish you all the luck in the world, and it's a delight to have you join us and talk about the process.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.